Hey, make sure you order your Coaching You videos, 15 videos, 10 NBA coaches, best content we've ever had. Go to 2018.coachingyou.tv, $249 for 15 videos. Order today. Hey, let's take a second to tell you about one of our partners, Dr. Dish. Dr. Dish basketball shooting machines are the most high-tech and durable basketball shooting machines on the market today. Each shooting machine was designed specifically for high repetition training to allow players to improve through technology. Dr. Dish offers game-like training to give hundreds of shooting reps in just minutes and to provide powerful analytics to help players improve their game. Dr. Dish has also introduced Skill Builder, which is the first of its kind of basketball shooting industry that enables coaches and players to stay connected, design and upload training exercises that combine shooting, conditioning, and ball handling into one complete workout, and instantly receive feedback on their workout, allowing for real-time adjustments and improved performance. It is without question the most innovative basketball training machine on the market. It's been the official shooting machine of Coaching You for the last 2 years. To learn more about Dr. Dish, log on to Dr. Dish basketball.com or follow them on Twitter at Dr. Dish B Ball. I wanted to announce a new partnership between Coaching You and InnerZone Sports. You know, for a long time, one of the intangibles by coaches and athletes is team chemistry, and it's a major factor all the time in whether a team has success or failure. When the folks from InnerZone came to me at Coaching You and said, we can even help your team, I was all ears. And what we did is we took a quick assessment, 2 to 4 minutes each person, and we were stunned by what we found out about ourselves and our team. You owe it to yourself to find out what InnerZone can do for your team. It's the simplest and fastest and most accurate software available to measure team chemistry. I highly recommend, without any reservation, the use of InnerZone with your team, whether you are middle school, high school, college, or professional team, to help take you to the next level. For further information, go to coachingyoulive.com/InnerZone. That's InnerZone. Hey, welcome to another edition of Coaching You Live. Our podcast today is with Coach Roy Rana. Roy is the head coach of Ryerson University in Toronto. He is a longtime friend. He is their men's national interim coach now, qualifying them for the World Championships next summer in China. And he has led their under 18, under 19 men's national team to championships. The under 19 team beat Coach Calipari in Cairo, Egypt a couple of years ago. And he's also won numerous world championships in our Nike Hoop Summit every April in Portland. He coaches the world select team. And if you've ever seen his teams play on TV in that game, you see one of the best young coaches there is in basketball. He's someone I've gotten to know over the years through Coach Raveling. And let me tell you, this guy is a rising star. His team competed last year and lost in the finals of the Canadian University Championships. This man could coach any team anywhere, including the NBA. He is a spectacular coach and a better human being. You're really going to enjoy after we talk to our partners, Roy Rana.
Fast Model Sports is the world's most versatile basketball coaching software to help power your preparation. Fast Model has developed the industry's best coaching software, including the number one play diagramming and playbook software, FastDraw. FastDraw bridges the gap between whiteboarding and the digital world with an incredibly easy-to-use interface that can be used on both your computer and your iPad, providing maximum portability for your own personal play and drill database. It doesn't stop there. Along with FastDraw, they have other great programs such as FastScout, which I have used, which helps coaches create clean professional scouting reports customized for your team. Fast Model is trusted and used by every NBA team and WNBA team and 85% of Division I college teams and over 8,000 high school and youth teams from over 75 countries around the world. In addition to a great product, they also provide basketball coaching resources through their blog and playbank, which features over 5,000 free plays and drills for their online coaching community. For access to these plays and more information, visit fastmodelsports.com or follow them on Twitter at @fastmodel.
Hey, welcome to another Coaching You podcast with the coach, Brendan Sir, and I'm so excited today to have an old friend as a guest, Roy Rana, who is the head coach of Ryerson University in Toronto, my favorite city in the world. And Roy is also the head coach of a Canadian senior team right now, the national men's team, till Jay Triano is ready to take over next summer. But he's also been the head coach of their junior national team for several years, under 18, under 19. So welcome, my friend.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Excited to be on.
Well, you know, we go back a long way, and we have so many mutual friends, of which one of our great friends and mentors in basketball, George Raveling, I think introduced us way back when. But, you know, tell me, first of all, how did your relationship with Coach Raveling start?
Wow. You know what? Coach Rav has quietly been watching me work for, almost 15 years now. I had the an incredible opportunity to start giving to Nike and in the grassroots basketball scene in a number of different ways, starting with an older event called the Nike Global Challenge that ran for many years. And
yeah,
I'd coach the Canadian teams, and we'd be in Portland, or we'd be in Chicago or Washington, and we'd play in this kind of international competition that Nike set up. And he got a chance to watch me work there, and then he got a chance to watch me work as I started my career as a national team coach at the cadet level, which was under 16 at the time. And then we were in Hamburg and won a bronze medal at the World Championship in Hamburg with the cadets. And on that team was Anthony Bennett, Andrew Wiggins, Nick Stauskas.
Wow.
Olivier Hamlin, Kevin Tyre. We were loaded. We had no idea what we had, because they were really young kids, and he had a great run there. And, coach, just as he is, he's always very supportive. And, we just started talking, and we built a connection, and that connection has become a really deep friendship. And he's become one of the great mentors in my life. And now we get a chance to work in a much more impactful way. Every April in the Hoop Summit, where we bring together, some of the best talent in the world to play the U.S. And that's only just strengthened our relationship and our friendship.
I think many of us in coaching think we are mentors, and we should be, but we're not. Guys like yourself and myself value having mentors, and so I have, frankly, several. I need a lot of help, and so I have several mentors, and a lot of people I tell they're my mentor, and they don't even know it, but that's how strong an influence they are on it. Tell me how Coach Rav has influence you in so many ways, I know, on and off the court.
It's almost endless. I'll share one with you just that, I haven't shared it with him, but I'll share it with you just recently. When I'm having a conversation with Coach Rav, often there's a very long pause in that conversation.
Mm-hmm.
And it's almost uncomfortable, where you're speaking and then all of a sudden there's this pause, and I often thought about why is there this awkward pause when we're having these conversations? And really what it's about is he's such a deep listener, and he takes time to kind of process what you said so that he can be articulate and be thoughtful in his answer. And he's taught me a ton about being patient and how important it is to be a listener and being a listener intently. So something as small as that, and then something as large as, just helping go guide me in my career and making me realize that, chasing the next opportunity is not necessarily always the best path to take, and to take value in what you do. And as long as you enjoy what you're doing and feel like you're making an impact and doing it for the right reasons and doing it the right way, that's far more important than, and many of the other things that come our way in coaching. And so he's become a father figure to me. And
yeah,
you know, whether it's a personal issue, whether it's a basketball issue, and probably more importantly, he really made me think and grow as a leader, and made me an avid reader, and all those things that he does for so many people.
You know, I tell him all the time, I said, Rev, you're in your 80s now, you're getting better. You're getting so much better. Can you imagine how good you would have been if you're coaching now? And I think that's what happens when you're a continuous learner. The improvement just keeps going. And I love to read, his blogs and his, each week when I get him, because it's one of the ways I learn and grow, because he's always, as you said, providing opportunities to make me think about something. And I think that is one of the great gifts that he has. You know, he never stops learning, and he never stops teaching and sharing. That's a great thing he does. He shares endlessly.
And I'll share one more with you that was kind of life-changing for me. You know, I started my career in education.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're a teacher here in Canada, it's a pretty good profession. You know, the benefits are very good. You know, you have your summers off. You have this great pension. Mm-hmm. So it's a really secure and safe and stable career to be in. And, you know, it has its own challenges, absolutely. But as a profession, it's a great profession. And most of us in education, look at our retirement date as a key milestone in our career, because we know that at some point in time, as from education, you'll be able to retire and continue on into whatever else you want to do. And I left education to, become a full-time coach. And the one thing that Coach Rav has taught me is that there is no retirement date. You know, for me, I don't look at employment anymore as that. I just look at it as a challenge, and work is something I love to do. And much like him, I never see myself stopping. Yeah. I see myself giving and growing for as long as I'm alive.
You know, one of the things you just, as always, when we have our conversations, Roy, you stimulate my thinking. And one of the things that Rav told me, years ago when I did a podcast, I asked him a couple of questions that I was, I was fascinated by. And I asked him, what did he ever learn from Phil Knight? What's the most important thing, actually, that he learned from Phil Knight? I was just curious. And he looked at, he said he's the best listener. He's the best listener I've ever come across. And, you think about the CEO, a billionaire owner of a business, and you never would associate that quality of listening as his most, his best quality. And I said, wow. And then I said, what's the biggest things that you learned from working at Nike? Because this is a man, I've known Coach Rav since I was 14 years old when I was a camper at Five Star. He was the first guest lecturer we ever had. And I was in awe of him when he taught rebounding at our camp. You know, we had Five Star basketball camp, which has turned into later on the best basketball camp in the world. And we had 48 campers our first year. And UB Brown, my high school coach, took us there. Six kids from Little Fairlawn High School in New Jersey. And we took them there. And there's Coach Rav. And he's teaching rebounding. And probably half the kids were 5'6" and under, But his dynamic teaching of the art of rebounding, and I think that's what he actually called it, the art of rebounding, has stuck with me entire career. And it was so incredible. He taught us like he was getting $50,000 to teach. It was that incredible that I said, what a performer, I said. And knowing my friend Howard Garfinkel, the owner, he probably got Rav a cheeseburger at the fireside afterwards. No money, but he taught with that enthusiasm, which also was a great lesson of, when you are going to teach or perform, do it like you are getting $50,000. And and I never forgot what he did. And it turned into we're talking about a relationship 70 years later. And what a blessing for a guy like that to be in your life. But I asked him, I said, Coach, what did you learn now as a coach? Now you went to Nike to work in business. What does the coach learn when he went to work for Nike? He said, our leaders have taught us there that when we finish doing something really good, and we're all patting ourselves on the back that we just made a great new shoe, designed a beautiful uniform, the leader of that group, that team of in that project, when they're all finished patting themselves on the back, his job is to then say to them, what's next? And you know what? And it goes right into coaching. You know, no matter how good we feel after, what's next? And then the other one he taught me was, which I just absolutely love, and I think it's something that we all should have for life, is that when they do something absolutely extraordinary and the Air Jordan comes out, with Michael comes out with the best new Jordan brand shoe, or LeBron's new shoe becomes the number one selling shoe that Nike has, and all of a sudden he says, there's no finish line. We never stop. There's no finish line. And that's a way to avoid complacency. And those two lessons have really shaped the way I do my business now. And I can't thank him enough for sharing.
Yeah, we're both blessed to have him in our lives. There's no question about that.
Now, when you got your job back in 2009 with Ryerson, talk about the challenge of taking over that program at that time.
Wow, you know, again, I had come out of a high school program that was, you know, the greatest program in the history of the country. I mean, you know, we had an incredible tradition. We had won more than anybody had ever won, and, you know, we were rolling. It was in many ways a higher profile job than the one I took at Ryerson. And, you know, when I got to Ryerson, it was a program that had, you know, a long history of struggle. And, you know, it needed to be built from ground up again. And it was an exciting opportunity for me. And to be honest with you, it was trial and error. I really technically wasn't really up to speed. I had a lot to learn just on teaching the game at that level. And, you know, being in a shot clock environment now, coming from the high school game where we had no shot clocks. Mm-hmm. I've never really recruited before. And now I was in a situation where I had to recruit talent and, you know, had a staff and, you know, build a culture within a group and also within staff. And it took some trial and error. And it took us, you know, two seasons to kind of figure it out. And a lot of that was me. You know, and I had this incredible appetite to figure it out. And I spent, you know, every break that we would have on exams in December, I would, you know, I remember going to Philadelphia and going to see five different schools practice in like 7 days and then coming back home. So it was really about this just insane kind of desire to learn and figure it out and give the best I could to, you know, to my players. And then in the third year, we had a breakthrough and got to the national championships, had a tremendous upset in our Final Four, in our league Final Four, and things just started to roll from there. And we found little wins around along the way, and then we had one really big one, and then we just started to establish kind of how we play and who we wanted to recruit that fit into our program, and you know, and really started to kind of figure out our system and put it down on paper so that it was, you know, actionable, and so it worked. In some ways, uncannily, exactly how I envisioned it. You know, I had written my AD at the time had asked me to write a portfolio that had, you know, goals and, you know, where I saw the program going in 3 to 5 years, and I wrote it down, and then I looked back on it after, I looked back at it time to time. It's almost uncanny what we were able to achieve.
So really?
It's been a pretty special run. Yeah, you know, and part of that was not just basketball. It was, you know, what I thought our crowd would look like, you know, what kind of gear we would wear. it was a real vivid picture of what I wanted our program to become. And thankfully, we've been able to make it happen with some luck and a lot of hard work.
Well, you know, they say in business, they call it, the vision cast by the leader is so important in the success of any endeavor in business. And so you cast a vision as a leader that you were able to execute, which is very powerful and very unusual when you're not in control maybe of all the things that you want, budget, you know, unlimited scholarships, you know, whatever it might be. But going into something that you had not even been in before at that level. So that is even more remarkable, Roy. When you talked, we have a worldwide audience, and, you know, U.S. coaches are the biggest listeners. Canadian coaches are second, and Australian third. But from our audience, explain to them, let's say, the difference, or, you know, what makes Canadian basketball unique to, let's say, a Power Five program in the U.S. You know, so tell us about, you know, for instance, at your level, how many scholarships you're allowed to have, et cetera, and things like that, just, you know, to help us with familiarity.
Sure, absolutely. Well, you know, from a resource perspective, you know, we can't compete with the Power Five. And, you know, we are much more, kind of aligned on a D2 model where much of, you know, we have partial scholarships. Much of our scholarship money is tied to academic achievement. So our students are really, we don't have anyone that's on full scholarship. We have athletes that are getting some money and some support in other ways, whether it's, you know, jobs on campus or, you know, jobs in the off season, work studies, those types of situations will help alleviate some of the financial burdens that our kids have. But, from a basketball perspective, I'd say we look a lot more like the big game in Europe. We play a 24-second shot clock. We play FIBA rules. So it's a nice hybrid of, you know, mm-hmm. North American style and, you know, the North American athlete and, the FIBA game. So, you know, a lot of, you know, what I search for and what I look to is in Europe to see what, you know, some of the top coaches are doing there. Obviously, we look at the NCAA and the NBA, but we are much, much more closely aligned in a style of play perspective to what we would see in European basketball. So it's a nice blend. It's a nice hybrid. Considering the resource challenges that we have at our level in Canadian university sport, I think we still do a tremendous job of developing high-level professional talent. You know, we've got a number of players now from our level that are playing at the highest level in Europe. And we're hoping to create some stories of putting, you know, one or two of our guys in the NBA. So,
wow.
I think the quality is still very, very high. And I think, you know, people who saw us play Duke in August would be able to understand, hey, these guys aren't too bad after all. It's not, you know, this, weak Canadian school. We're just striving to get better. And I would say this is that for me, resources have never been an excuse to not be excellent.
Yeah.
You find excellence in many, many different ways. And you can build excellence in many different ways. And for us, we have certain constraints that, and we work with them and try to do the best we can.
Let me ask you this, Roy. Are you able, do you recruit any kids in the States, or do you not go there at all?
We have not used the U.S. model, but throughout our league, there are a number of American players in our league.
That's what I thought.
There are a number of international players in our league.
Yeah.
We have an international player from Dakar, Senegal on our team, so there is an international flavor. We do have a certain, you know, number of international players we can have on our roster, but there's been a history of Americans in our level and at Canadian University basketball for a number of years.
Yeah, that's right. I remember years ago there was a lot of American players, a lot of kids from New York City area when I was, you know, that went up to Canada and stuff. And now Toronto being, you know, literally my favorite city, having lived there when I coached the Raptors. Talk to me about the presence of the Raptors in that city and, frankly, only a few blocks from where you guys are housed. The influence that has helped over Canadian basketball, in your opinion?
It's been absolutely transformational. You know, I grew up in the game when there was no NBA basketball in Toronto. And mm-hmm. you know, we were watching, you know, a game a week, maybe, you know, and tape right. delay and all those types of things just to see these basketball stars. And now they're right in front of us. You know, they're on TV, they're in our communities, they're, you know, accessible, you can go to games, our coaches can get to practices, you know, the Raptors have done tremendous work in the community to spread the sport. And I think probably the biggest thing that they've done is they've, you know, instilled a lot of dreams into a lot of young kids. And we're seeing that in now our 13 Canadians that are in the NBA, and I think out of the 13, you know, probably 11 are from the Toronto area. So they've had a tremendous impact and completely transformed the sport in our country.
And I believe it's the second most of any country are Canadians in the NBA now, if I'm not mistaken, which is absolutely incredible. And more to come, you know, with this year, you know, with RJ Barrett, et cetera, you know, going to be a top three or four pick, you know, so it's just phenomenal. The future of Canadian basketball we've seen over the last several years is just keep keeps growing and growing. And when you were coaching, was it the under 19 team or 18 team when you coached against Cal?
That was under 19 in Cairo, yeah.
Yeah. And what Cairo, a place Egypt. To play in Cairo, Egypt, huh? I mean,
oh, yeah, incredible.
Yeah, and talk about your team that year that went against Coach Calipari and his team. Give me some of the guys that you had on your squad, just to give our listeners an idea of how good these guys were.
Yeah, well, it's an interesting story because we were actually missing a ton of guys that, you know, many of our best players, Shea Alexander is now with the Clippers, you know, O'Shea Brissett is at Syracuse, and we probably really a drafted kid this year. Nikhil Alexander Walker, that's a Virginia Tech. A lot of them didn't play and couldn't play, so we took a group that wasn't necessarily filled with all of our stars. And probably the two main guys in that group, three main guys, were Lindell Whittington, who's at Iowa State and could get drafted this year, Abu Kijan, who's at the University of Oregon, and then R.J. Barrett, obviously, and everybody knows what R.J. did in that tournament. But it was an interesting experience because I think for the first time, because we missed out on so much of our top talent, that people didn't think we were going to be very good. And we had a lot of heartbreakers in quarterfinals at World Championships trying to get to a Final Four. And the group just really came together and I think showed the power of just having a really good team and not necessarily an all-star team. And we played the right way. We played together. We were willing to share. Everybody bought into their roles. We beat a really good French team in the quarterfinal, and then obviously had this incredible performance against the U.S. in the semi, beating a strong U.S. team that missed some of their best players as well. But it was a very, very special semifinal, and we had an incredible performance by R.J. Barrett. And just everybody just played to their potential and played together as a group. It was a really cohesive win on both ends of the scale.
You know, I think, again, I was coaching in Toronto in 97 with the Raptors, but, having coached the Pistons, just 4 hours to the west, was always in Canada, in the off season, or we would play exhibition games there from 89 on. And we watched the growth of Canadian basketball. I remember Chuck Daly saying to me one day when we were playing an exhibition game in the Sky Dome, 67,000 people there, and he says, this is going to be one of the five best franchises in the NBA if they ever get a team. And I'm like looking at him saying, you really think so? He says, the city will demand it, and the city deserves it. And Chuck was always a visionary, and he was right on the money, And I just felt that, what I saw was an international city of Toronto with, phenomenal, and I mean this in a complimentary way, it was a melting pot of people from all over the world. And that made your city, it was like New York City to me, or Chicago or LA, in that we had folks from everywhere that contributed to the community and at the same time made sports better. How has that helped, with the kids coming in from everywhere?
I think we both have, been blessed to travel all around the world, do the sport, and see a lot of different basketball communities, and probably more importantly, just a lot of different cultures and a lot of different communities. Mm-hmm. Toronto is certainly very, very unique and very, very special in that it may be the most diverse city in the world. And I think, our openness to, different people, different cultures, different faiths, has been a strength, especially in team sport. And basketball's probably been the greatest demonstration of that. And if you look at our national team program now, it's reflective of our immigration. And, mm-hmm. We have, players from, that parents were born in Africa and Europe and in the Caribbean, in Asia. Our team is a melting pot. Our team is a reflection of Canadian society, and myself as a coach as well. My parents were both, born and raised in India, came here through England when I was a very young child. So for me to be the national team coach coming from the background I do is a pretty incredible story as well. And those are Canadian stories, and it's something that I take great pride in, and I think our team takes great pride in. The fact that we are reflective and representative of our diversity.
And that's what makes it is such a cool thing. And I think, by what you did with the under 19 team, I thought it also gave, from a basketball standpoint, I thought it gave the Canadian national team self-esteem, because you were always on the edge, but couldn't quite jump in. And now these kids saw we can beat anyone. Because when you beat the U.S., you can beat anyone, right? So,
yeah.
And Cal's one of the greatest coaches we've ever had in college basketball. So to beat a guy like that, so they have a good coach, they have good players, and they are the U.S. with unlimited funds. And all of a sudden, that does so much for your kids. And I think that's one of the things that really, really is going to take a, made an imprint that's going to help Canadian basketball forever. Talk about Steve Nash coming in, you know, to kind of oversee things. How has that been?
I mean, it's been obviously just the name Steve Nash is enough
yeah.
to,
yeah.
you know, to move a lot of things and move a lot of people and get an engagement level that we haven't seen before. And, you know, I think the thing about Steve is that, you know, as powerful as his name is, I mean, just the strength of his personality and the character of who he is incredible. And he makes an impact, you know, on a larger level because, you know, if Steve Nash picks up the phone, people are going to pick up the phone. They're going to answer the call. And,
yep.
But more so than that, it's the small conversations that he'll have, the individual conversations that he might have with a player or a trainer or a manager. And he is so gifted that way. You know, he's such a transformational figure that injects confidence into people in so many ways, like he did when he was a player. And he's made a huge impact. And, you know, much of that is subtle because that's kind of who he is. He's, you know, he's not a guy that loves the attention and seeks the spotlight. But, you know, in so many ways, in so many conversations, even with me, with, you know, small little messages of support and mm-hmm. small little messages for our kids when we've been away on trips. And he finds ways to motivate and inspire, and I think that's been huge for our country.
He's one of the greats of all time, and, you know, just his accomplishments, and to get someone that young involved, it's fantastic, I think, and it's really going to pay dividends down the road, as it already has. But I think, I personally think Canadian basketball is just at the tipping point right now. I just think they're what they're going to see in the future is just going to be off the charts. We got to see each other, and I got to really watch you for the first time on a worldwide scale when I used to go to the Nike Hoop Summit. And one of the real fun parts about the NBA was we used to be able to go and watch the world team practice. But we couldn't see the U.S. team only play in the game. But the neat thing was to go and watch your team, because you're coaching the world select team at Hoop Summit in Portland. And I'm saying to myself, this guy can really coach. And then all of a sudden the game would come and you just kick their ass every year. And I thought that was just great, you know. But tell me about that experience and your growth.
Again, you know, it's probably been the greatest stage for me and platform for me as a coach because, you know, also the most daunting because, you know, you step on the floor in practice and you have, you know, 400 people watching you. Every NBA team, you know, Larry Bird's in the gym, and Danny Ainge is in the gym, and, you know, R.C. Duke, and, you know, you name it. I mean, everybody that's anything in basketball is in the gym, and it's your show. And, you know, it's like being on stage in a massive performance. And, you know, how do you get over the nerves? How do you get over the insecurity? How do you get over the jitters and just be a teacher and deliver to these kids? And many of them who don't necessarily speak English.
Yeah.
Have to work as a translator and, so it's been an incredible growth opportunity because it's challenged me to overcome, you know, my, you know, it's made me uncomfortable. You know, it's made me work in a place where I've been, you know, have some doubt. And, you know, am I going to be able to do this? And am I doing this at a high enough level? And you have to build a team in a very, very short period of time. You know, you have 5 days. They're coming from all over the world. Many of them have played games with their pro teams. Some of them are high school kids. You know, that challenge of trying to build a team in a short prep period with tons of distraction and then really have them focusing on executing on game day has been an incredible opportunity for me to grow as a coach and then build incredible relationships along the way. You know, I've watched some incredible stories of, you know, guys like Bismack Biyombo, who's been completely unknown and came in my first Hoop Summit and got a triple-double and then ended up becoming seventh in the draft.
Yeah, I remember that.
It's an interesting exercise in coaching. You know, from a pure coaching perspective, you know, being able to manage all of those different elements and have a plan and put it in place and deliver it over a very short period of time, eliminating distractions, and then hopefully that, you know, you're in a place where your guys are confident enough to go deliver on game day. And I'm truly blessed. I love that opportunity. It's one of my favorite things I do in basketball.
Hey, Roy, let's talk about when you're playing at Ryerson. Talk to our listeners about your style of play, offensively and defensively. So offensively, how do you like to play?
You know, it's interesting because, you know, we hear a lot about, you know, almost every coach says they like to play fast.
Yeah.
And I would say, you know, I'm a, you know, coach who likes to push the ball in transition. You want to try and get a scoring opportunity as quickly as we can in the shot clock. We play at 24 o'clock. So for me, it's pretty simple. You know, we're going to try and get that early attack. And if it's not there, then it's all about flow. So for us, it's pace, and then it's flow and kind of having a rhythm to our offense. You know, I often talk about, you know, what's our, if we had music and we were playing music and our music matched our offense, you know, what would that sound like? What would the rhythm of our offense be like? And we want it to be very fluid. We want it to sound like a really nice song. And then within that, you know, there's many, you know, hopefully your whatever actions you're running is going to create an advantage. And then what is that advantage, and can we exploit that advantage? Is that advantage size? Is it speed? Is it a personnel mismatch? Is it a point of attack on the floor? And then really that's what we're trying to do. So we're trying to, you know, attack early, flow into our offense, and then really take advantage of whatever the defense has kind of given up to us. And that's how we play on the offensive end. And on the defensive end, it's very, very disciplined. You know, we'll change defenses. You know, I think there's some value in being able to change defenses and keep people off balance. But we have a base that we use. And, you know, for me, the three main pillars of a good defensive team are, you know, guarding the transition, guarding penetration, and I think now the game has all become pick and roll. So, mm-hmm. You know, guarding ball screens, those are the three foundations of our defensive philosophy. And we drill it and hammer it and, you know, get on them and just kind of reinforce it and emphasize it every single day. And we just try to get as good as we can at what we do and not get too caught up in the whole scouting our opponent, making adjustments, and just because I think clarity of what you do sometimes is far more important than countering what somebody else does.
I totally agree. Totally agree. Talk about some of the rules that you have there. You mentioned about FIBA rules, 24-second clock, which I absolutely wish our college teams would go to. The advantages of a 24-second clock, since you coached that and coached it on when you coach international competition, the biggest thing for that is what? In showing and teaching kids to develop, what would you say?
Well, I think, you know, the first one is decision making, because mm-hmm. You don't have, you know, you can't waste time on the clock, and you have to be able to make, you know, quick decisions. You have to be able to play off the catch. You have to be able to read defenses. So, you know, decision making is the one that's the most critical. And then I would say second most in the FIBA game now, in a short clock game, is you got to be able to shoot the basketball. And there still is a role for non-shooters in the game, but that role is becoming more and more defined. Mm-hmm. And in most offenses now at any level, if you have, you know, two non-shooters on the floor, that's a real challenge. And often now we're seeing teams that have, you know, five shooters on the floor. We're seeing, you know, big guys stepping out, and especially at the highest level, that can shoot the three. And I think that's what's really transformed the sport in the last probably, you know, 3 to 5 years, is the evolution of the center or the five man who can step out and shoot it. And you're seeing that at, you know, everywhere. I mean, it's, you can still play with a five man who's more of a roller, like a Clint Capella who plays for me in the Heat Summit.
Yep.
But, you know, we're looking at guys like, you know, Al Horford, the Lopez brothers. You're looking at, you know, Valanciunas here in Toronto, the big guys that are, you know, not late in their careers, but now entering the prime of their careers, who are now shooting the three and shooting it pretty regularly. So, mm-hmm. We're starting to see that impact the sport here at our level in Canada. We have a ton of teams that shoot a ton of threes. So I'd say that decision-making aspect in the 24-second game and then your ability to shoot the basketball are critical.
I think that's great. And, you know, the big argument on the college level here is college coaches want to control everything, and they feel that longer clock gives them more control. And they use a very weak excuse that all the teams that have the best talent will win all the games, but, you know, it's what we see every night in the NBA. the teams that have the best talent don't win every night. Teams that play best win every night, you know. And I think if the rules are the same, you're going to have to teach your guys how to develop and stuff. And so I just wish they would move up to the rest of the world and kind of figure that out, you know. And that would be better for basketball in general. You know, I think the biggest thing, Roy, that I've seen with in your program is talk about the incredible facility that you now have at Ryerson compared to when you got there.
Yeah, it's night and day. I mean, we were in a pretty historic gym, but it was more of a high school style gym that we had in our old building. And Maple Leaf Gardens, which is one of the most iconic sports buildings in Canada, you know, home of the Toronto Maple Leafs, actually home of the first NBA game, Toronto yes. Huskies played there in the 50s. You know, we've had the Beatles, Muhammad Ali fought there. I mean, it was this, you know, mecca for sport. And when the new, now it's called the Scotiabank Center, was opened up, the Maple Leaf Gardens was dormant. And it was dormant for many, many years until, you know, Ryerson University bought the building. And, you know, in a partnership with the government, we basically went in and gutted it, rebuilt it, and it became our athletic facility. And so we're in this iconic place for sport in a state-of-the-art facility, and it's really transformed, what we can do for our program, but also what we can provide for sports in Canada. You know, we had the Pan Am Games were in that building. You know, we've had so many, we've had some big games against, Wake Forest in there. We played Wisconsin in there. Our national teams played. You know, we've had numerous events that are really impactful. The UConn women were there last year. So,
wow.
We've been able to do some really interesting things and really kind of provide a really nice 4,000-seat venue in the city that can, you know,
and it's right there in the middle of Toronto, which is so fabulous.
It's right there, yeah. Right downtown.
Right there. It's really, do you know when my first game I ever coached with the Raptors was in the Maple Leaf Gardens? We were splitting that in the Sky Dome. So how about that? You know, it was the oldest building in the world. But, man, it was like walking into the locker rooms were like so small, but you knew you were in a history building, and it was just kind of neat and stuff. Well, my friend, I'll tell you what, you have really done so much in basketball, and you're just starting. You're just starting, man. And this year is going to be incredible for you, with your, national team responsibilities, as well as trying to get back to the finals of the Canadian University Division. It's so special, and it's so good of you to visit with us. And, I love Canadian basketball. I love Canadian coaches and players. And thanks for sharing with us. And, Roy, if guys want to get in and gals want to get in touch with you or follow you, give us your Twitter handle that they can follow you on.
Roy_Ram. It's pretty easy.
And if they want to contact you through email, if they are going to come into Toronto, they might want to see your practice.
roy.rana@ryerson.ca. Our practices are always open, so coaches can come and watch anytime they want.
That's fabulous. And coaches, I highly recommend it because you will get a clinic by just watching this man in action. Coach, I really appreciate you sharing with us. And as always, it's just great to visit with you anytime, but thanks so much for doing this, for coaching you, and the coaches or our listeners around the world are just going to love this. So thank you, my friend.
Thank you.
Roy, incredible. What an opportunity to learn from someone who understands the depth of coaching, and I couldn't agree more on Roy's idea about the 24-second clock. And as Jay Billis has said for years, the 24-second clock, the biggest thing of why it would help basketball in the States, because we're the only ones that don't use it, is that it teaches your players to make quick and good decisions. That's what the game is all about. So we appreciate so much Roy Rana sharing with our world community on basketball, because he is a member of it in a big, big way as an international coach, and is also one of the top coaches in all Canadian basketball, which is the fastest growing segment of basketball in the world today, in my opinion. But Listen, I want to also make sure that I remind you, for those of you who have inquired about my PhD in coaching course, this is a course that has nothing to do with basketball, but everything to do with the art of coaching, to make you a better coach. There's strategy, there's X and O, there's science and all that. This is about the people part of it, how to develop team, how to grow individuals, and to make yourself better, more impactful with the team and players that you have. This is what this is all about. 13 lessons geared to you, the coach. I call it my PhD in course in coaching, not because you're going to get a doctorate in front of your name, but because the content that we have is based on 45 years of experience and research, coaching the best players in the world and working with the best coaches in the world. So at the end of this, you're going to have about 3 hours of videos from myself and from some experts that we have in this field to help you become a better coach. There's a downloadable workbook, but I can't emphasize enough. If you sign up in this month that we are promoting this, you will get nearly $800 in bonuses for a $97 course. This is one of the proudest things I've ever done in the field of coaching. Please follow us on Twitter, coaching_you, myself at Brendan Sir, or Coaching You Live, our website, and you can get information on there. Obviously, we're hitting hundreds of thousands of people right now with emails. Trust me, this is a must for you to take yourself to the next level of coaching. Till next week, this is the coach, Brendan Sir.